Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Dollars and Dominion by Professor Mary Bridges is a scholarly history of how United States banking power expanded overseas in the early 20th century and helped lay foundations for later dollar dominance. Published by Princeton University Press in the America and the World series, the book sits at the intersection of economic history, business history, financial history, and United States foreign relations. Rather than treating American financial supremacy as a natural result of national growth, Bridges presents it as a contingent project built through institutional experimentation, government support, foreign borrowing, and on-the-ground improvisation. Her central object is the overseas branch bank, an often overlooked institution that connected American exporters, local elites, credit information systems, and emerging trade finance practices. The book explains how global financial infrastructure was assembled through mundane procedures as well as geopolitical ambition, while also showing how race, class, and gender assumptions shaped who received access to banking services and who remained outside them. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, overseas branch banks as the material infrastructure of American financial expansion. A central contribution of Dollars and Dominion is its focus on overseas branch banks as infrastructure rather than as simple extensions of corporate ambition. Bridges treats these institutions as physical and administrative platforms through which American bankers gathered information, assessed risk, cultivated clients, and linked foreign trade to United States financial markets. This emphasis matters because it shifts attention away from abstract measures of dollar power and toward the offices, personnel, records, routines, and local relationships that made financial influence operational. Branch banks did not merely follow American power abroad. They helped create channels through which commercial influence could become durable. By establishing a presence in foreign cities, bankers could observe local business networks, build reputational authority, and support American firms seeking reliable payment mechanisms. This approach also clarifies why financial globalization required more than capital. It required institutions capable of translating local knowledge into standardized financial decisions. Bridges, therefore, presents banking infrastructure as both practical and political. It enabled trade, but it also defined which communities appeared legible, trustworthy, and commercially useful to American finance. Secondly, the rise of United States finance capitalism is improvised rather than inevitable. Bridges challenges the familiar assumption that United States financial dominance naturally followed industrial growth, military power, or the eventual post-war status of the dollar. Her account stresses contingency. Early overseas banking was not a perfectly planned imperial strategy, but a fragile and improvised enterprise that depended on uncertain business opportunities, institutional experimentation, and uneven state support. This framing changes how readers understand superpower formation. Instead of presenting American bankers as already confident architects of a global system, the book shows them adapting under pressure, learning from rivals, and struggling to make their operations viable. The point is not that American power was accidental in a simple sense. Rather, Bridges argues that durable dominance emerged from repeated acts of problem-solving that gradually hardened into infrastructure. This interpretation is valuable because it resists hindsight. Once dollar-centered finance became powerful, it could appear inevitable by reconstructing its ramshackle beginnings. The book reveals how historical outcomes depend on choices, constraints, borrowed practices, and institutional pathways that could have developed differently. Thirdly, government policy and bankers' acceptances in the creation of trade finance architecture. Dollars and Dominion places private bankers within a broader institutional setting shaped by the United States government and the Federal Reserve System. Bridges highlights how legal and monetary reforms made new kinds of trade finance possible, especially the use of bankers' acceptances as instruments for financing international commerce. This is important because it complicates any simple division between private enterprise and public power. Overseas banking expansion depended on government-enabled financial tools, regulatory frameworks, and the credibility associated with the American state. Bankers could not simply export financial power on their own. They needed domestic institutions that could support liquidity, standardize practices, and connect foreign transactions to American credit markets. The analysis also shows how financial instruments are not neutral technical devices. When embedded in branch bank operations, they shape the flow of trade, the evaluation of risk, and the position of American banks in global commerce. Bridges, therefore, makes trade finance visible as a mechanism of geopolitical transformation. The rise of financial power depended on instruments and rules that linked everyday commercial transactions to the wider expansion of United States influence. Fourthly, foreign credit information as a tool for mapping privilege and exclusion. One of the book's distinctive themes is the role of foreign credit information in helping bankers sort unfamiliar communities into categories of opportunity and risk. Bridges shows that overseas banks gathered and organized knowledge about local firms, merchants, elites, and populations in ways that shaped access to financial services. This was not simply a matter of efficient record keeping. Credit information helped define who counted as a trustworthy client and who remained peripheral to the banking world. The book connects these practices to racialized, class-based, and gendered hierarchies that were already present in colonial and commercial settings. In this account, financial infrastructure reproduced social boundaries while appearing to operate through technical judgment. The importance of this argument lies in its explanation of how inequality becomes institutional. Exclusion did not always require explicit prohibition. It could be built into information systems, lending norms, client categories, and assumptions about respectability or reliability. Bridges, therefore, links the history of banking to the social history of global capitalism, showing that financial expansion carried embedded judgments about people and communities. Lastly, British models and local elite alliances in sustaining American banking abroad. Bridges situates United States overseas banking within a competitive international environment in which American bankers lacked long experience. Rather than inventing global finance from scratch, they learned from British foreign banking practices and relied on relationships with local elites. This emphasis is significant because it weakens exceptionalist narratives of American financial expansion. The United States did not simply displace older powers through superior resources. Its bankers borrowed methods, adapted institutional models, and depended on intermediaries who already understood local markets. Alliances with elites helped branch banks gain credibility, information, and client access, but they also tied American finance to existing social hierarchies. This created a flexible infrastructure that could survive uncertainty, yet it also limited whose interests the system served. The book, therefore, presents financial power as relational. It emerged through cooperation as well as competition, imitation as well as innovation, and local accommodation as well as national ambition. By foregrounding these dependencies, Bridges shows that the making of a superpower was not a solitary American achievement, but a process embedded in older imperial networks and local structures of privilege. In conclusion, Dollars and Dominion is best suited for readers interested in economic history, United States foreign relations, business history, international political economy, and the origins of global capitalism. It will be especially useful for scholars, students, and policy-minded readers who want to understand how financial power becomes institutional rather than merely declared. The book offers intellectual benefits by making visible the mechanisms that connect banking practice to geopolitical influence, including branch offices, credit files, trade finance instruments, public regulation, and alliances with foreign elites. It also provides a practical lesson for interpreting modern finance. Monetary dominance rests on infrastructures that are built, maintained, and socially patterned, not simply on market efficiency or national wealth. Compared with broader histories of American empire or dollar hegemony, Bridges stands out by concentrating on the operational level of banking and by showing how mundane financial systems carried assumptions about race, class, gender, and trustworthiness. Compared with technical financial histories, it stands out by connecting institutional detail to questions of power and inequality. Its value lies in explaining not only that the United States became a financial superpower, but how such power was assembled through contingent, uneven, and socially selective processes. If you would like to support Professor Mary Bridges, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.